was pulling it onward toward the light in the center. Soon they could no longer see the walls of the cavern. They might have been at sea except that there were no waves. Harry looked down and saw the reflected gold of his wand light sparkling and glittering on the black water as they passed. The boat was carving deep ripples upon the glassy surface, grooves in the dark mirror. And then Harry saw it, marble white, floating inches below the surface. "Professor," he said, and his startled voice echoed loudly over the silent water.
"Harry,
I think I saw a hand in the water, a human hand."
"Yes, I'm sure you did," said Dumbledore calmly.
Harry stared down into the water, looking for the vanished hand, and a sick feeling rose in his throat.
"So that thing that jumped out of the water?"
But Harry had his answer before Dumbledore could reply. The wand light had slid over a fresh patch of water and showed him, this time, a dead man lying face up inches beneath the surface, his open eyes misted as though with cobwebs, his hair and his robe swirling around him like smoke.
"There are bodies in here,"
said Harry, and his voice sounded much higher than usual and most unlike his own.
"Yes," said Dumbledore placidly, "but we do not need to worry about them at the moment."
"At the moment?" Harry repeated, tearing his gaze from the water to look at Dumbledore.
"Not while they are merely drifting peacefully below us," said Dumbledore. "There is nothing to be feared from a body, Harry, any more than there is anything to be feared from the darkness. Lord Voldemort, who of course secretly fears both, disagrees. But once again he reveals his own lack of wisdom. It is the unknown we fear when we look upon death and darkness, nothing more."
Harry said nothing. He did not want to argue, but he found the idea that there were bodies floating around them and beneath them horrible. And, what was more, he did not believe that they were not dangerous.
"But one of them jumped,"
he said, trying to make his voice as level and calm as Dumbledore's. "When I tried to summon the Horcrux, a body leapt out of the lake."
"Yes," said Dumbledore. "I am sure that once we take the Horcrux, we shall find them less peaceable. However, like many creatures that dwell in cold and darkness, they fear light and warmth, which we shall therefore call to our aid should the need arise. Fire, Harry,"
Dumbledore added with a smile, in response to Harry's bewildered expression.
"Oh, right,"
said Harry quickly. He turned his head to look at the greenish glow toward which the boat was still inexorably sailing. He could not pretend now that he was not scared. The great black lake teeming with the dead. It seemed hours and hours ago that he had met Professor Trelawney, that he had given Ron and Hermione Felix Felicis. He suddenly wished he had said a better goodbye to them, and he hadn't seen Ginny at all.
"Nearly there," said Dumbledore cheerfully.
Sure enough, the greenish light seemed to be growing larger at last, and within minutes the boat had come to a halt, bumping gently into something that Harry could not see at first. But when he raised his illuminated wand, he saw that they had reached a small island of smooth rock in the center of the lake.
"Careful not to touch the water,"
said Dumbledore again, as Harry climbed out of the boat. The island was no larger than Dumbledore's office, an expanse of flat dark stone on which stood nothing but the source of that greenish light, which looked much brighter when viewed close to. Harry squinted at it. At first he thought it was a lamp of some kind, but then he saw that the light was coming from a stone basin, rather like the Pensieve, which was set on top of a pedestal. Dumbledore approached the basin, and Harry followed. Side by side, they looked down into it. The basin was full of an emerald liquid emitting that phosphorescent glow.
"What is it?"
asked Harry quietly.
"I am not sure," said Dumbledore. "Something more worrisome than blood and bodies, however."
Dumbledore pushed back the sleeve of his robe over his blackened hand and stretched out the tips of his burned fingers toward the surface of the potion.
"Sir, no, don't touch." "I cannot touch," said Dumbledore, smiling faintly. See? I cannot approach any nearer than this. You try. Staring, Harry put his hand into the basin and attempted to touch the potion. He met an invisible barrier that prevented him coming within an inch of it. No matter how hard he pushed, his fingers encountered nothing but what seemed to be solid and inflexible air.
Out of the way, please, Harry, said Dumbledore.
He raised his wand and made complicated movements over the surface of the potion, murmuring soundlessly. Nothing happened, except perhaps that the potion glowed a little brighter. Harry remained silent while Dumbledore worked, but after a while Dumbledore withdrew his wand, and Harry felt it was safe to talk again.
You think the Horcrux is in there, sir?
Oh, yes. Dumbledore peered more closely into the basin. Harry saw his face reflected, upside down, in the smooth surface of the green potion.
But how to reach it? This potion cannot be penetrated by hand, vanished, parted, scooped up, or siphoned away. Nor can it be transfigured, charmed, or otherwise made to change its nature.
Almost absent-mindedly, Dumbledore raised his wand again, twirled it once in midair, and then caught the crystal goblet that he had conjured out of nowhere.
I can only conclude that this potion is supposed to be drunk.
What? Said Harry.
No. Yes, I think so. Only by drinking it can I empty the basin and see what lies in its depths.
But what if it kills you?
Oh, I doubt that it would work like that, said Dumbledore easily. Lord Voldemort would not want to kill the person who reached this island.
Harry couldn't believe it. Was this more of Dumbledore's insane determination to see good in everyone?
Sir, said Harry, trying to keep his voice reasonable. Sir, this is Voldemort with... I'm sorry, Harry. I should have said he would not want to immediately kill the person who reached this island.
Dumbledore corrected himself.
He would want to keep them alive long enough to find out how they managed to penetrate so far through his defenses and, most importantly of all, why they were so intent upon emptying the basin. Do not forget that Lord Voldemort believes that he alone knows about his Horcruxes.
Harry made to speak again, but this time Dumbledore raised his hand for silence, frowning slightly at the emerald liquid, evidently thinking hard.
Undoubtedly, he said finally, this potion must act in a way that will prevent me taking the Horcrux. It might paralyze me, cause me to forget what I am here for, create so much pain I am distracted, or render me incapable in some other way. This being the case, Harry, it will be your job to make sure I keep drinking, even if you have to tip the potion into my protesting mouth. You understand?
Their eyes met over the basin, each pale face lit with that strange green light. Harry did not speak. Was this why he had been invited along? So that he could force-feed Dumbledore a potion that might cause him unendurable pain?
You remember, said Dumbledore, the condition on which I brought you with me?
Harry hesitated, looking into the blue eyes that had turned green in the reflected light of the basin.
But what if you swore, did you not, to follow any command I gave you? Yes, but I warned you, did I not, that there might be danger?
Yes, said Harry, but...
Well then,
said Dumbledore, shaking back his sleeves once more and raising the empty goblet.
You have my orders.
Why can't I drink the potion instead? Asked Harry desperately.
Because I am much older, much cleverer, and much less valuable, said Dumbledore. Once and for all, Harry, do I have your word that you will do all in your power to make me keep drinking?
Couldn't...
Do I have it? But your word, Harry!
I... All right, but... Before Harry could make any further protest, Dumbledore lowered the crystal goblet into the potion. For a split second, Harry hoped that he would not be able to touch the potion with the goblet, but the crystal sank into the surface as nothing else had. When the glass was full to the brim, Dumbledore lifted it to his mouth.
"Your good health, Harry."
And he drained the goblet. Harry watched, terrified, his hands gripping the rim of the basin so hard that his fingertips were numb.
"Professor,"
he said anxiously, as Dumbledore lowered the empty glass.
"How do you feel?"
Dumbledore shook his head, his eyes closed. Harry wondered whether he was in pain. Dumbledore plunged the glass blindly back into the basin, refilled it, and drank once more. In silence, Dumbledore drank 3 goblets full of the potion. Then halfway through the 4th goblet, he staggered and fell forward against the basin. His eyes were still closed, his breathing heavy.
"Professor Dumbledore," said Harry,
his voice strained.
"Can you hear me?"
Dumbledore did not answer. His face was twitching, as though he was deeply asleep, but dreaming a horrible dream. His grip on the goblet was slackening. The potion was about to spill from it. Harry reached forward and grasped the crystal cup, holding it steady.
"Professor, can you hear me?"
he repeated loudly, his voice echoing around the cavern. Dumbledore panted and then spoke in a voice Harry did not recognize, for he had never heard Dumbledore frightened like this.
"I don't want... Don't make me..."
Harry stared into the whitened face he knew so well, at the crooked nose and half-moon spectacles, and did not know what to do.
"Don't like... Want to stop?"
moaned Dumbledore.
You can't stop, Professor," said Harry. "You've got to keep drinking, remember? You told me you had to keep drinking. Here."
Hating himself, repulsed by what he was doing, Harry forced the goblet back toward Dumbledore's mouth and tipped it so that Dumbledore drank the remainder of the potion inside.
"No,"
he groaned as Harry lowered the goblet back into the basin and refilled it for him.
"I don't want to. I don't want to. Let me go." "It's all right, Professor,"
said Harry, his hands shaking.
"It's all right. I'm here." "Make it stop. Make it stop,"
moaned Dumbledore.
"Yes, yes, this'll make it stop,"
lied Harry. He tipped the contents of the goblet into Dumbledore's open mouth. Dumbledore screamed. The noise echoed all around the vast chamber, across the dead black water.
"No, no, 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 I can't, I can't. Don't make me. I don't want to." "It's all right, Professor, it's all right,"
said Harry loudly, his hands shaking so badly he could hardly scoop up the 6th goblet full of potion. The basin was now half empty.
"Nothing's happening to you. You're safe. It isn't real. I swear it isn't real. Take this. Now take this."
And obediently, Dumbledore drank, as though it was an antidote Harry offered him. But upon draining the goblet, he sank to his knees, shaking uncontrollably.
"It's all my fault. All my fault,"
he sobbed.
"Please make it stop. I know I did wrong. Oh, please, make it stop, and I'll never, never again."
"This will make it stop, Professor,"
Harry said, his voice cracking as he tipped the 7th glass of potion into Dumbledore's mouth. Dumbledore began to cower as though invisible torturers surrounded him. His flailing hand almost knocked the refilled goblet from Harry's trembling hands as he moaned,
"Don't hurt them. Don't hurt them, please. Please. It's my fault. Hurt me instead."
"Here, drink this. Drink this. You'll be all right,"
said Harry desperately. And once again Dumbledore obeyed him, opening his mouth even as he kept his eyes tight shut and shook from head to foot. And now he fell forward, screaming again, hammering his fists upon the ground while Harry filled the 9th goblet.
"Please, please, please, no. Not that. Not that. I'll do anything.
Just drink, Professor. Just drink."
Dumbledore drank like a child dying of thirst, but when he had finished, he yelled again as though his insides were on fire.
No more, please, no more.
Harry scooped up a 10th goblet full of potion and felt the crystal scrape the bottom of the basin.
We're nearly there, Professor. Drink this. Drink it.
He supported Dumbledore's shoulders, and again Dumbledore drained the glass. Then Harry was on his feet once more, refilling the goblet, as Dumbledore began to scream in more anguish than ever.
I want to die. I want to die. Make it stop. Make it stop. I want to die. Drink this, Professor. Drink this.
Dumbledore drank, and no sooner had he finished than he yelled,
Kill me!
This one will, gasped Harry. Just drink this. It'll be over. All over. Dumbledore gulped at the goblet, drained every last drop, and then with a great rattling gasp, rolled over onto his face.
No!
Shouted Harry, who had stood to refill the goblet again. Instead, he dropped the cup into the basin, flung himself down beside Dumbledore, and heaved him over onto his back. Dumbledore's glasses were askew, his mouth agape, his eyes closed.
No, said Harry, shaking Dumbledore. No, you're not dead. You said it wasn't poison. Wake up. Wake up.
Renovate, he cried, his wand pointing at Dumbledore's chest. There was a flash of red light, but nothing happened.
Renovate! Sir, please.
Dumbledore's eyelids flickered. Harry's heart leapt.
Sir, are you...
Water, croaked Dumbledore.
Water, panted Harry. Yes.
He leapt to his feet and seized the goblet he had dropped in the basin. He barely registered the golden locket lying curled beneath it.
Aguamenti!
He shouted, jabbing the goblet with his wand. The goblet filled with clear water. Harry dropped to his knees beside Dumbledore, raised his head, and brought the glass to his lips. But it was empty. Dumbledore groaned and began to pant.
But I had some. Wait, aguamenti, said Harry again, pointing his wand at the goblet.
Once more, for a second, clear water gleamed within it, but as he approached Dumbledore's mouth, the water vanished again.
Sir, I'm trying, said Harry desperately,
but he did not think that Dumbledore could hear him. He had rolled onto his side and was drawing great, rattling breaths that sounded agonizing.
Aguamenti! Aguamenti! Aguamenti!
The goblet filled and emptied once more. And now Dumbledore's breathing was fading. His brain whirling in panic, Harry knew instinctively the only way left to get water, because Voldemort had planned it so. He flung himself over to the edge of the rock and plunged the goblet into the lake, bringing it up full to the brim of icy water that did not vanish.
Sir, here!
Harry yelled, and lunging forward, he tipped the water clumsily over Dumbledore's face. It was the best he could do, for the icy feeling on his arm not holding the cup was not the lingering chill of the water. A slimy white hand had gripped his wrist, and the creature to whom it belonged was pulling him slowly backward across the rock. The surface of the lake was no longer mirror smooth. It was churning, and everywhere Harry looked, white heads and hands were emerging from the dark water. Men and women and children with sunken, sightless eyes were moving toward the rock, an army of the dead rising from the black water.
Petrificus Totalus! Yelled Harry, struggling to cling to the smooth, soaked surface of the island as he pointed his wand at the Infurious that had his arm. It released him, falling backward into the water with a splash. He scrambled to his feet, but many more Infuri were already climbing onto the rock, their bony hands clawing at its slippery surface, their blank, frosted eyes upon him, trailing waterlogged rags, sunken faces leering.
Petrificus Totalus! Harry bellowed again, backing away as he swiped his wand through the air. 6 or 7 of them crumpled, but more were coming toward him.
Impedimenta! Incarcerus!
A few of them stumbled, 1 or 2 of them bound in ropes, but those climbing onto the rock behind them merely stepped over or on the fallen bodies. Still slashing at the air with his wand, Harry yelled.
Sectum Semper! Sectum Semper!
But though gashes appeared in their sodden rags and their icy skin, they had no blood to spill. They walked on, unfeeling, their shrunken hands outstretched toward him, and as he backed away still farther, he felt arms enclose him from behind, thin, fleshless arms, cold as death, and his feet left the ground as they lifted him and began to carry him slowly and surely back to the water, and he knew there would be no release, that he would be drowned and become one more dead guardian of a fragment of Voldemort's shattered soul. But then, through the darkness, fire erupted, crimson and gold, a ring of fire that surrounded the rock, so that the Inferi, holding Harry so tightly, stumbled and faltered. They did not dare pass through the flames to get to the water. They dropped Harry. He hit the ground, slipped on the rock, and fell, grazing his arms, but scrambled back up, raising his wand and staring around. Dumbledore was on his feet again, pale as any of the surrounding Inferi, but taller than any too, the fire dancing in his eyes. His wand was raised like a torch, and from its tip emanated the flames like a vast lasso, encircling them all with warmth. The Inferi bumped into each other, attempting blindly to escape the fire in which they were enclosed. Dumbledore scooped the locket from the bottom of the stone basin and stowed it inside his robes. Wordlessly, he gestured to Harry to come to his side. Distracted by the flames, the Inferi seemed unaware that their quarry was leaving as Dumbledore led Harry back to the boat, the ring of fire moving with them, around them, the bewildered Inferi accompanying them to the water's edge, where they slipped gratefully back into their dark waters. Harry, who was shaking all over, thought for a moment that Dumbledore might not be able to climb into the boat. He staggered a little as he attempted it. All his efforts seemed to be going into maintaining the ring of protective flame around them. Harry seized him and helped him back to his seat. Once they were both safely jammed inside again, the boat began to move back across the black water, away from the rock, still encircled by that ring of fire, and it seemed that the Inferi swarming below them did not dare resurface.
"Sir," panted Harry, "sir, I forgot about fire. They were coming at me, and I panicked."
"Quite understandable," murmured Dumbledore. Harry was alarmed to hear how faint his voice was. They reached the bank with a little bump, and Harry leapt out, then turned quickly to help Dumbledore. The moment that Dumbledore reached the bank, he let his wand hand fall. The ring of fire vanished, but the Inferi did not emerge again from the water. The little boat sank into the water once more, clanking and tinkling. Its chains slithered back into the lake, too. Dumbledore gave a great sigh and leaned against the cavern wall.
"I am weak," he said.
"Don't worry, sir,"
said Harry at once, anxious about Dumbledore's extreme pallor and by his air of exhaustion.
"Don't worry. I'll get us back. Lean on me, sir."
And pulling Dumbledore's uninjured arm around his shoulders, Harry guided his headmaster back around the lake, bearing most of his weight.
"The protection was, after all, well designed," said Dumbledore faintly. "One alone could not have done it. You did well. Very well, Harry."
"Don't talk now," said Harry, fearing how slurred Dumbledore's voice had become, how much his feet dragged.
"Save your energy, sir. We'll soon be out of here. The archway will have sealed again. My knife."
"There's no need. I got cut on the rock," said Harry firmly.
"Just tell me where." "Here."
Harry wiped his grazed forearm upon the stone. Having received its tribute of blood, the archway reopened instantly. They crossed the outer cave, and Harry helped Dumbledore back into the icy seawater that filled the crevice in the cliff.
"It's going to be all right, sir,"
Harry said over and over again, more worried by Dumbledore's silence than he had been by his weakened voice.
"We're nearly there. I can apparate us both back. Don't worry."
"I'm not worried, Harry,"
said Dumbledore, his voice a little stronger despite the freezing water.
"I am with you."
Chapter 27 The Lightning-Struck Tower. Once back under the starry sky, Harry heaved Dumbledore onto the top of the nearest boulder, and then to his feet. Sodden and shivering, Dumbledore's weight still upon him, Harry concentrated harder than he had ever done upon his destination, Hogsmeade. Closing his eyes, gripping Dumbledore's arm as tightly as he could, he stepped forward into that feeling of horrible compression. He knew it had worked before he opened his eyes. The smell of salt, the sea breeze, had gone. He and Dumbledore were shivering and dripping in the middle of the dark high street in Hogsmeade. For one horrible moment, Harry's imagination showed him more in fury creeping toward him around the sides of shops. But he blinked and saw that nothing was stirring. All was still, the darkness complete, but for a few street lamps and lit upper windows.
"We did it, Professor,"
Harry whispered with difficulty. He suddenly realized that he had a searing stitch in his chest.
"We did it! We got the Horcrux!"
Dumbledore staggered against him. For a moment Harry thought that his inexpert apparition had thrown Dumbledore off balance. Then he saw his face, paler and damper than ever in the distant light of a street lamp.
"Sir, are you all right?"
"I've been better," said Dumbledore weakly,
though the corners of his mouth twitched.
"That potion was no health drink."
And to Harry's horror, Dumbledore sank onto the ground.
"Sir, it's okay, sir. You're going to be all right. Don't worry."
He looked around desperately for help, but there was nobody to be seen, and all he could think was that he must somehow get Dumbledore quickly to the hospital wing.
"We need to get you up to the school, sir. Madame Pomfrey."
"No,"
said Dumbledore.
"It is Professor Snape whom I need, but I do not think I can walk very far just yet."
"Right, sir, listen. I'm going to knock on a door, find a place you can stay. Then I can run and get Madame—"
"Severus,"
said Dumbledore clearly.
"I need Severus."
"All right, then, Snape. But I'm going to have to leave you for a moment so I can—"
Before Harry could make a move, however, he heard running footsteps. His heart leapt. Somebody had seen, somebody knew they needed help. And looking around, he saw Madame Rosmerta scurrying down the dark street toward them on high-heeled, fluffy slippers, wearing a silk dressing gown embroidered with dragons.
"I saw you apparate as I was pulling my bedroom curtains. Thank goodness, thank goodness. I couldn't think what to... But what's wrong with Albus?"
She came to a halt, panting, and stared down wide-eyed at Dumbledore.
"He's hurt,"
said Harry. "Madame Rosmerta, can he come into the Three Broomsticks while I go up to the school and get help for him?"
"You can't go up there alone. Don't you realize? Haven't you seen?"
"If you help me support him," said Harry, not listening to her, "I think we can get him inside."
"What has happened?"
asked Dumbledore.
"Rosmerta, what's wrong?"
The dark mark, Albus."
And she pointed into the sky, in the direction of Hogwarts. Dread flooded Harry at the sound of the words. He turned and looked. There it was, hanging in the sky above the school, the blazing green skull with a serpent tongue, the mark Death Eaters left behind whenever they had entered a building, wherever they had murdered.
"When did it appear?"
asked Dumbledore, and his hand clenched painfully upon Harry's shoulder as he struggled to his feet.
"Must have been minutes ago. It wasn't there when I put the cat out, but when I got upstairs..."
"We need to return to the castle at once,"
said Dumbledore.
"Rosmerta."
And though he staggered a little, he seemed wholly in command of the situation.
"We need transport. Brooms."
"I've got a couple behind the bar,"
she said, looking very frightened.
"Shall I run and fetch?"
"No, Harry can do it."
Harry raised his wand at once.
"I see you, Rosmerta's brooms."
A second later they heard a loud bang as the front door of the pub burst open. Two brooms had shot out into the street and were racing each other to Harry's side, where they stopped dead, quivering slightly at waist height.
"Rosmerta, please send a message to the Ministry,"
said Dumbledore as he mounted the broom nearest him.
"It might be that nobody within Hogwarts has yet realized anything is wrong. Harry, put on your invisibility cloak."
Harry pulled his cloak out of his pocket and threw it over himself before mounting his broom. Madame Rosmerta was already tottering back toward her pub as Harry and Dumbledore kicked off from the ground and rose up into the air. As they sped toward the castle, Harry glanced sideways at Dumbledore, ready to grab him should he fall. But the sight of the dark mark seemed to have acted upon Dumbledore like a stimulant. He was bent low over his broom, his eyes fixed upon the mark, his long silver hair and beard flying behind him on the night air. And Harry too looked ahead at the skull, and fear swelled inside him like a venomous bubble, compressing his lungs, driving all other discomfort from his mind. How long had they been away? Had Ron, Hermione, and Ginny's luck run out by now? Was it one of them who had caused the mark to be set over the school? Or was it Neville, or Luna, or some other member of the DA? And if it was, he was the one who had told them to patrol the corridors. He had asked them to leave the safety of their beds. Would he be responsible again for the death of a friend? As they flew over the dark, twisting lane down which they had walked earlier, Harry heard, over the whistling of the night air in his ears, Dumbledore muttering in some strange language again. He thought he understood why, as he felt his broom shudder when they flew over the boundary wall into the grounds. Dumbledore was undoing the enchantments he himself had set around the castle so they could enter at speed. The dark mark was glittering directly above the astronomy tower, the highest of the castle. Did that mean the death had occurred there? Dumbledore had already crossed the crenellated ramparts and was dismounting. Harry landed next to him seconds later and looked around. The ramparts were deserted. The door to the spiral staircase that led back into the castle was closed. There was no sign of a struggle, of a fight to the death, of a body. "What does it mean?" Harry asked Dumbledore, looking up at the green skull with its serpent's tongue glinting evilly above them. "Is it the real mark? Has someone definitely been... Professor?" In the dim green glow from the mark, Harry saw Dumbledore clutching at his chest with his blackened hand.
"Go and wake Severus," said Dumbledore faintly but clearly. "Tell him what has happened and bring him to me. Do nothing else. Speak to nobody else. And do not remove your cloak. I shall wait here."
"But..."
"You swore to obey me, Harry. Go."
Harry hurried over to the door leading to the spiral staircase, but his hand had only just closed upon the iron ring of the door when he heard running footsteps on the other side. He looked around at Dumbledore, who gestured him to retreat. Harry backed away, drawing his wand as he did so. The door burst open and somebody erupted through it and shouted, "Expelliarmus!" Harry's body became instantly rigid and immobile, and he felt himself fall back against the tower wall, propped like an unsteady statue, unable to move or speak. He could not understand how it had happened. Expelliarmus was not a freezing charm. Then, by the light of the mark, he saw Dumbledore's wand flying in an arc over the edge of the ramparts and understood. Dumbledore had wordlessly immobilized Harry, and the second he had taken to perform the spell had cost him the chance of defending himself. Standing against the ramparts, very white in the face, Dumbledore still showed no sign of panic or distress. He merely looked across at his disarmor and said,
"Good evening, Draco."
Malfoy stepped forward, glancing around quickly to check that he and Dumbledore were alone. His eyes fell upon the second broom.
"Who else is here?"
"A question I might ask you, or are you acting alone?"
Harry saw Malfoy's pale eyes shift back to Dumbledore in the greenish glare of the mark.
"No," he said. "I've got backup. There are Death Eaters here in your school tonight."
"Well, well,"
said Dumbledore, as though Malfoy was showing him an ambitious homework project.
"Very good indeed. You found a way to let them in, did you?"
"Yeah,"
said Malfoy, who was panting.
"Right under your nose, and you never realized."
"Ingenious," said Dumbledore. "Yet, forgive me, where are they now? You seem unsupported."
"They met some of your guards. They're having a fight down below. They won't be long. I came on ahead. I've got a job to do.
Well, then, you must get on and do it, my dear boy, said Dumbledore softly.
There was silence. Harry stood imprisoned within his own invisible, paralyzed body, staring at the two of them, his ears straining to hear sounds of the Death Eaters' distant fight. And in front of him, Draco Malfoy did nothing but stare at Albus Dumbledore, who, incredibly, smiled.
Draco, Draco, you are not a killer.
How do you know? Said Malfoy at once.
He seemed to realize how childish the words had sounded. Harry saw him flush in the mark's greenish light.
You don't know what I'm capable of, said Malfoy more forcefully. You don't know what I've done.
Oh, yes, I do, said Dumbledore mildly. You almost killed Katie Bell and Ronald Weasley. You have been trying, with increasing desperation, to kill me all year. Forgive me, Draco, but they have been feeble attempts. So feeble, to be honest, that I wonder whether your heart has been really in it.
It has been in it, said Malfoy vehemently. I've been working on it all year, and tonight...
Somewhere in the depths of the castle below, Harry heard a muffled yell. Malfoy stiffened and glanced over his shoulder.
Somebody is putting up a good fight, said Dumbledore conversationally. But you were saying, yes, you have managed to introduce Death Eaters into my school, which, I admit, I thought impossible. How did you do it?
But Malfoy said nothing. He was still listening to whatever was happening below, and seemed almost as paralyzed as Harry was.
Perhaps you ought to get on with the job alone, suggested Dumbledore. What if your backup has been thwarted by my guard? As you have perhaps realized, there are members of the Order of the Phoenix here tonight, too. And after all, you don't really need help. I have no wand at the moment. I cannot defend myself.
Malfoy merely stared at him.
I see,
said Dumbledore kindly, when Malfoy neither moved nor spoke.
You are afraid to act until they join you.
I'm not afraid, snarled Malfoy, though he still made no move to hurt Dumbledore. It's you who should be scared.
But why? I don't think you will kill me, Draco. Killing is not nearly as easy as the innocent believe. So tell me, while we wait for your friends, how did you smuggle them in here? It seems to have taken you a long time to work out how to do it.
Malfoy looked as though he was fighting down the urge to shout or to vomit. He gulped and took several deep breaths, glaring at Dumbledore, his wand pointing directly at the latter's heart. Then, as though he could not help himself, he said,
I had to mend that broken vanishing cabinet that no one's used for years, the one Montague got lost in last year.
Ah!
Dumbledore's sigh was half a groan. He closed his eyes for a moment.
That was clever. There is a pair, I take it.
In Borgin and Birks, said Malfoy, and they make a kind of passage between them. Montague told me that when he was stuck in the Hogwarts one, he was trapped in limbo, but sometimes he could hear what was going on at school, and sometimes what was going on in the shop, as if the cabinet was travelling between them, but he couldn't make anyone hear him. In the end, he managed to apparate out, even though he'd never passed his test. He nearly died doing it. Everyone thought it was a really good story, but I was the only one who realized what it meant. Even Borgin didn't know. I was the one who realized there could be a way into Hogwarts through the cabinets, if I fixed the broken one.
Very good, murmured Dumbledore. So the Death Eaters were able to pass from Borgin and Birks into the school to help you. A clever plan. A very clever plan. And, as you say, right under my nose.
Yeah, said Malfoy, who bizarrely seemed to draw courage and comfort from Dumbledore's praise. Yeah, it was.
But there were times,
Dumbledore went on.
Weren't there, when you were not sure you would succeed in mending the cabinet, and you resorted to crude and badly judged measures, such as sending me a cursed necklace that was bound to reach the wrong hands, poisoning mead there was only the slightest chance I might drink.
Yeah, well, you still didn't realize who was behind that stuff, did you?
Sneered Malfoy, as Dumbledore slid a little down the ramparts, the strength in his legs apparently fading, and Harry struggled fruitlessly, mutely, against the enchantment binding him.
As a matter of fact, I did, said Dumbledore. I was sure it was you.
Why didn't you stop me then? Malfoy demanded.
I tried, Draco. Professor Snape has been keeping watch over you on my orders.
He hasn't been doing your orders. He promised my mother.
Of course, that is what he would tell you, Draco. But
he's a double agent, you stupid old man. He isn't working for you. You just think he is.
We must agree to differ on that, Draco. It so happens that I trust Professor Snape.
Well, you're losing your grip then, sneered Malfoy. He's been offering me plenty of help, wanting all the glory for himself, wanting a bit of the action. What are you doing? Did you do the necklace? That was stupid. It could have blown everything. But I haven't told him what I've been doing in the Room of Requirement. He's going to wake up tomorrow and it'll all be over, and he won't be the Dark Lord's favorite anymore. He'll be nothing compared to me. Nothing.
Very gratifying, said Dumbledore mildly. We all lack appreciation for our own hard work, of course. But you must have had an accomplice, all the same, someone in Hogsmeade, someone who was able to slip Katie
Dumbledore closed his eyes again and nodded, as though he was about to fall asleep.
Of course, Russ Murtagh. How long has she been under the imperious curse?
Got there at last, have you? Malfoy taunted.
There was another yell from below, rather louder than the last. Malfoy looked nervously over his shoulder again, then back at Dumbledore, who went on.
So poor Russ Murtagh was forced to lurk in her own bathroom and pass that necklace to any Hogwarts student who entered the room unaccompanied? And the poisoned mead. Well, naturally, Rosmerta was able to poison it for you before she sent the bottle to Slughorn, believing that it was to be my Christmas present. Yes, very neat, very neat. Poor Mr. Filch would not, of course, think to check a bottle of Rosmerta's. Tell me, how have you been communicating with Rosmerta? I thought we had all methods of communication in and out of the school monitored.
Enchanted coins, said Malfoy, as though he was compelled to keep talking, though his wand hand was shaking badly. I had one and she had the other, and I could send her messages.
Isn't that the secret method of communication the group that called themselves Dumbledore's Army used last year?
Asked Dumbledore. His voice was light and conversational, but Harry saw him slip an inch lower down the wall as he said it.
Yeah, I got the idea from them, said Malfoy with a twisted smile. I got the idea of poisoning the mead from the mudblood Granger as well. I heard her talking in the library about Filch not recognizing potions.
Please do not use that offensive word in front of me, said Dumbledore.
Malfoy gave a harsh laugh.
You care about me saying mudblood when I'm about to kill you?
Yes, I do,
said Dumbledore, and Harry saw his feet slide a little on the floor as he struggled to remain upright.
But as for being about to kill me, Draco, you have had several long minutes now. We are quite alone. I am more defenseless than you can have dreamed of finding me, and still you have not acted.
Malfoy's mouth contorted involuntarily, as though he had tasted something very bitter.
Now, about tonight, Dumbledore went on.
I am a little puzzled about how it happened. You knew that I had left the school. But of course,
he answered his own question.
Ross Myrta saw me leaving. She tipped you off using your ingenious coins, I'm sure.
That's right, said Malfoy. But she said you were just going for a drink. You'd be back.
Well, I certainly did have a drink. And I came back after her fashion,
mumbled Dumbledore.
So, you decided to spring a trap for me?
We decided to put the dark mark over the tower and get you to hurry up here to see who'd been killed, said Malfoy. And it worked.
Well, yes and no, said Dumbledore. But am I to take it, then, that nobody has been murdered?
Someone's dead, said Malfoy, and his voice seemed to go up an octave as he said it. One of your people. I don't know who. It was dark. I stepped over the body. I was supposed to be waiting up here when you got back. Only your phoenix lot got in the way.
Yes, they do that, said Dumbledore.
There was a bang and shouts from below, louder than ever. It sounded as though people were fighting on the actual spiral staircase that led to where Dumbledore, Malfoy and Harry stood, and Harry's heart thundered unheard in his invisible chest. Someone was dead. Malfoy had stepped over the body. But who was it?
There is little time, one way or another, said Dumbledore. So let us discuss your options, Draco.
My options? Said Malfoy loudly. I'm standing here with a wand. I'm about to kill you.
My dear boy, let us have no more pretense about that. If you were going to kill me, you would have done it when you first disarmed me. You would not have stopped for this pleasant chat about ways and means.
I haven't got any options, said Malfoy, and he was suddenly white as Dumbledore. I've got to do it. He'll kill me. He'll kill my whole family.
I appreciate the difficulty of your position, said Dumbledore. Why else do you think I have not confronted you before now? Because I knew that you would have been murdered if Lord Voldemort realized that I suspected you.
Malfoy winced at the sound of the name.
I did not dare speak to you of the mission with which I knew you had been entrusted, in case he used legitimacy against you, continued Dumbledore. But now at last we can speak plainly to each other. No harm has been done. You have hurt nobody, though you are very lucky that your unintentional victims survived. I can help you, Draco.
No, you can't, said Malfoy, his wand hand shaking very badly indeed. Nobody can. He told me to do it, or he'll kill me. I've got no choice.
He cannot kill you if you are already dead. Come over to the right side, Draco, and we can hide you more completely than you can possibly imagine. What is more, I can send members of the Order to your mother tonight to hide her likewise. Nobody would be surprised that you had died in your attempt to kill me. Forgive me, but Lord Voldemort probably expects it. Nor would the Death Eaters be surprised that we had captured and killed your mother. It is what they would do themselves, after all. Your father is safe at the moment in Azkaban. When the time comes, we can protect him, too. Come over to the right side, Draco. You are not a killer.
Malfoy stared at Dumbledore.
But I got this far, didn't I?
He said slowly.
They thought I'd die in the attempt, but I'm here, and you're in my power. I'm the one with the wand. You're at my mercy.
No, Draco, said Dumbledore quietly. It is my mercy, and not yours, that matters now.
Malfoy did not speak. His mouth was open, his wand hand still trembling. Harry thought he saw it drop by a fraction. But suddenly footsteps were thundering up the stairs, and a second later Malfoy was buffeted out of the way as four people in black robes burst through the door onto the ramparts. Still paralyzed, his eyes staring unblinkingly, Harry gazed in terror upon four strangers. It seemed the Death Eaters had won the fight below. A lumpy-looking man with an odd lopsided leer gave a wheezy giggle.
Dumbledore cornered, he said,
and he turned to a stocky little woman who looked as though she could be his sister, and who was grinning eagerly.
Dumbledore wanderers, Dumbledore alone. Well done, Draco, well done.
Good evening, Amicus, said Dumbledore calmly, as though welcoming the man to a tea party. And you brought Electro, too. Charming. The woman gave an angry little titter.
Think your little jokes will help you on your deathbed, then?
She jeered.
Jokes? No. These are manners, replied Dumbledore.
Do it,
said the stranger standing nearest to Harry, a big, rangy man with matted grey hair and whiskers, whose black Death Eater's robes looked uncomfortably tight. He had a voice like none that Harry had ever heard, a rasping bark of a voice. Harry could smell a powerful mixture of dirt, sweat, and, unmistakably, of blood coming from him. His filthy hands had long yellowish nails.
"Is that you, Fenrir?" asked Dumbledore.
"That's right," rasped the other. "Pleased to see me, Dumbledore."
"No, I cannot say that I am."
Greyback grinned, showing pointed teeth. Blood trickled down his chin, and he licked his lips slowly, obscenely.
"But you know how much I like kids, Dumbledore.
Am I to take it that you are attacking, even without the full moon now? This is most unusual. You have developed a taste for human flesh that cannot be satisfied once a month."
"That's right," said Fenrir Greyback. "Shocks you, that, does it, Dumbledore? Frightens you?"
"Well, I cannot pretend it does not disgust me a little," said Dumbledore. "And yes, I am a little shocked that Draco here invited you, of all people, into the school where his friends live."
"I didn't," breathed Malfoy. He was not looking at Fenrir. He did not seem to want to even glance at him.
"I didn't know he was going to come."
"I wouldn't want to miss a trip to Hogwarts, Dumbledore,"
rasped Greyback.
"Not when there are throats to be ripped out. Delicious, delicious."
And he raised a yellow fingernail and picked at his front teeth, leering at Dumbledore.
"I could do you for afters, Dumbledore."
"No!" said the fourth Death Eater sharply. He had a heavy, brutal-looking face.
"We've got orders! Draco's got to do it! Now, Draco, and quickly!"
Malfoy was showing less resolution than ever. He looked terrified as he stared into Dumbledore's face, which was even paler and rather lower than usual, as he had slid so far down the rampart wall.
"He's not long for this world, anyway, if you ask me,"
said the lopsided man, to the accompaniment of his sister's wheezing giggles.
"Look at him! What's happened to you, then, Dumby?"
"Oh, weaker resistance. Slower reflexes, Amicus," said Dumbledore. "Old age, in short. One day, perhaps, it will happen to you, if you are lucky."
"What's that mean, then? What's that mean?"
yelled the Death Eater, suddenly violent.
"Always the same, weren't you, Dumby? Talking and doing nothing. I don't even know why the Dark Lord's bothering to kill you. Come on, Draco, do it."
But at that moment there were renewed sounds of scuffling from below, and a voice shouted,
"They've blocked the stairs! Reducto! Reducto!"
Harry's heart leapt. So these four had not eliminated all opposition, but merely broken through the fight to the top of the tower and, by the sound of it, created a barrier behind them.
"Now, Draco, quickly!"
said the brutal-faced man angrily. But Malfoy's hand was shaking so badly that he could barely aim.
"I'll do it,"
snarled Fenrir, moving toward Dumbledore with his hands outstretched, his teeth bared.
"I said no!"
shouted the brutal-faced man. There was a flash of light, and the werewolf was blasted out of the way. He hit the ramparts and staggered, looking furious. Harry's heart was hammering so hard, it seemed impossible that nobody could hear him standing there, imprisoned by Dumbledore's spell. If he could only move, he could aim a curse from under the cloak.
"Draco, do it, or stand aside, so one of us..."
screeched the woman. But at that precise moment, the door to the ramparts burst open once more, and there stood Snape, his wand clutched in his hand as his black eyes swept the scene, from Dumbledore slumped against the wall to the four Death Eaters, including the enraged werewolf and Malfoy.
"We've got a problem, Snape,"
said the lumpy Amicus, whose eyes and wand were fixed alike upon Dumbledore.
"The boy doesn't seem able."
But somebody else had spoken Snape's name, quite softly.
"Severus."
The sound frightened Harry beyond anything he had experienced all evening. For the first time, Dumbledore was pleading. Snape said nothing, but walked forward and pushed Malfoy roughly out of the way. The three Death Eaters fell back without a word. Even the werewolf seemed cowed. Snape gazed for a moment at Dumbledore, and there was revulsion and hatred etched in the harsh lines of his face.
"Severus, please."
Snape raised his wand and pointed it directly at Dumbledore.
"Avada Kedavra!"
A jet of green light shot from the end of Snape's wand and hit Dumbledore squarely in the chest. Harry's scream of horror never left him. Silent and unmoving, he was forced to watch as Dumbledore was blasted into the air. For a split second, he seemed to hang suspended beneath the shining skull. And then he fell, slowly, backward, like a great rag doll, over the battlements and out of sight. Chapter 28 Flight of the Prince. Harry felt as though he too were hurtling through space.
"It had not happened. It could not have happened. Out of here, quickly,"
said Snape. He seized Malfoy by the scruff of the neck and forced him through the door ahead of the rest. Greyback and the squat brother and sister followed, the latter both panting excitedly. As they vanished through the door, Harry realized he could move again. What was now holding him paralyzed against the wall was not magic, but horror and shock. He threw the invisibility cloak aside as the brutal-faced Death Eater, last to leave the tower top, was disappearing through the door.
"Petrificus Totalus!"
The Death Eater buckled as though hit in the back with something solid and fell to the ground, rigid as a waxwork. But he had barely hit the floor when Harry was clambering over him and running down the darkened staircase. Terror tore at Harry's heart. He had to get to Dumbledore, and he had to catch Snape. Somehow the two things were linked. He could reverse what had happened if he had them both together. Dumbledore could not have died. He leapt the last 10 steps of the spiral staircase and stopped where he landed, his wand raised. The dimly lit corridor was full of dust. Half the ceiling seemed to have fallen in, and a battle was raging before him. But even as he attempted to make out who was fighting whom, he heard the hated voice shout,
"It's over! Time to go!"
and saw Snape disappearing around the corner at the far end of the corridor. He and Malfoy seemed to have forced their way through the fight unscathed. As Harry plunged after them, one of the fighters detached themselves from the fray and flew at him. It was the werewolf Fenrir. He was on top of Harry before Harry could raise his wand. Harry fell backward, with filthy matted hair in his face, the stench of sweat and blood filling his nose and mouth, hot, greedy breath at his throat.
"Petrificus Totalus!"
Harry felt Fenrir collapse against him. With a stupendous effort, he pushed the werewolf off and onto the floor as a jet of green light came flying toward him. He ducked and ran headfirst into the fight. His feet met something squashy and slippery on the floor, and he stumbled. There were two bodies lying there, lying face down in a pool of blood, but there was no time to investigate. Harry now saw red hair flying like flames in front of him. Ginny was locked in combat with the lumpy Death Eater, Amicus, who was throwing hex after hex at her while she dodged them. Amicus was giggling, enjoying the sport.
"Crucio! Crucio! You can't dance forever, pretty." "Impedimenta!"
yelled Harry. His jinx hit Amicus in the chest. He gave a pig-like squeal of pain, was lifted off his feet, and slammed into the opposite wall. Slid down it, and fell out of sight behind Ron, Professor McGonagall, and Lupin, each of whom was battling a separate Death Eater. Beyond them, Harry saw Tonks fighting an enormous blonde wizard, who was sending curses flying in all directions so that they ricocheted off the walls around them, cracking stone, shattering the nearest window.
"Harry, where did you come from?" Ginny cried,
but there was no time to answer her. He put his head down and sprinted forward, narrowly avoiding a blast that erupted over his head, showering them all in bits of wall.
Snape must not escape. He must catch up with Snape.
"Take that!" shouted Professor McGonagall, and Harry glimpsed the female Death Eater, Electo, sprinting away down the corridor with her arms over her head, her brother right